Today we're talking about William Stafford's Travelling Through the Dark. Let's listen to the poem first of all. Travelling through the dark, I found a deer dead on the edge of the Wilson River Road. It is usually best to roll them into the canyon. That road is narrow. To swerve might make more dead. By glow of the tail light, I stumbled back of the car and stood by the heap, a doe, a recent killing. She had stiffened already, almost cold. I dragged her off. She was large in the belly. My fingers touching her side brought me the reason. Her side was warm. Her fawn lay there waiting, alive, still, never to be born. Beside that mountain road I hesitated. The car aimed ahead, its lowered parking lights. Under the hood purred the steady engine. I stood in the glare of the warm exhaust turning red. Around our group I could hear the wilderness listen. I thought hard for us all, my only swerving, then pushed her over the edge into the river. In William Stafford's An Introduction to Some Poems, he offers some deprecating lines about his work, suggesting coyly, "Look, no one ever promised for sure that we would sing. We have decided to moan." Stafford takes the convention of poet as singer or bard, and poem as song, and turns it upon its head, suggesting that he and his poems aren't quite up to singing. Maybe moaning is as far as they would get. Subsequently, in the same poem, he talks about the importance of authenticity and describes it as an unforgiving and unswerving line. But he goes on to undercut his own voice again, suggesting, and speaking on behalf of the poems he is introducing, "And we are your wavery efforts at following it." While Stafford is knowingly overly harsh about his own successes and underplays both the simple lyrical beauty of much of his poetry and the compellingly authentic claims that can be found in it, we can turn to another of his poems, Travelling Through the Dark, to see a deceptively simple poem that unfolds as it is read and reread, and that both sings and holds straight and true to an authentic and challenging voice and idea. When An Introduction to Some Poems closes with the invitation, "Are you coming? Good. Now it is time," it is both blessing and curse that we too discover ourselves with Stafford travelling through the dark. Travelling Through the Dark is an interesting modern version of a lyric poem, a short piece that expresses the feelings of the narrator, but in such a curiously dispassionate and detached way that it offers ironic layers of meaning and perhaps submerged alternate reading of the poem. It is narrative in basic shape and deceptively simple at first, telling the tale of a late night driving experience, punctuated by the unfortunate discovery of a deer found dead in the road on a bend. That discovery, which already imposes an ethical burden on the narrator, should he intervene and remove the deer to make the road safe for others, is further complicated when the narrator discovers that the recently killed deer is pregnant and has a live fawn still warm in her belly. His response is now inevitably more complex in nature. Should he ignore the problem and others, the inorganic response? Or should he stop and intervene? Should he take a straight-line response and bother to remove the deer to make the road safe for others, the limited organic response? but effectively kill the fawn in the process by not intervening in its fate? Or should he remove the deer and attempt to save the unborn fawn, the organic but complicated and presumably impractical response? Some commentators don't see the controversy here. Richard Hugo, for example, writing in the Kansas Quarterly, confesses a degree of irritation with the poem. "I have no doubt what the decision should be, and at least I can understand my impatient urge to say, 'Stop thinking hard for us all, Bill, and get that damn deer off the road before somebody kills himself.' But surely that is the point. We all see the practicality of the limited organic response. Stafford himself notes, it is usually best to roll them into the canyon. That moral imperative is straightforward. Clear the road. Look after your fellow man, the next driver around the dark bend. The poem, however, creates a case where such a simple and narrowly focused response is at least potentially a dereliction of a greater duty. Stafford places us in physical, emotional, and ethical dark at the beginning of the text, which opens, "Travelling through the dark, I found a deer dead on the edge of the Wilson River Road." The lack of end punctuation between those opening lines takes us enjambed along the fluid, fast, dark pavement of the road. The alliterative effect of the repeated D consonants reminds us that though the poem seems prosaic and straightforward, it has an ear for euphony, and the dull, erratic thud of the repeated D's perhaps evoke for us a faltering heartbeat, or highlight those key words, dark, deer, dead, edge, road, which define in an even more urgently compressed poetic language than the already compressed poem, the central problem in the poem. If the first two lines are all fluid movement, the remaining two in the first quatrain are all stops, from the colon that closes the third line to the semicolon that creates the caesural pause in the fourth, where the reader must linger and reflect on the implications of acting or not acting. It is usually best to roll them into the canyon. That road is narrow. To swerve might make more dead. Stafford uses short sentences to express ordinary, uncomplicated, everyday truths. However, while it is usually best to dispose of the deer on that road quickly, this particular deer is different. It is this difference that creates the darkness of the journey, which is more than merely night driving. The next two stanzas unfold the nature of the problem. This is an unusual occurrence. The deer is dead, like other deer, but the fawn it carries is alive. Stafford's language choices are telling in these two stanzas, describing the deer in language that denies its organic nature. It is not an animal anymore, but something more inert and abstract. A heap, a recent killing, stiffened. The language moderates slightly, discussing the unborn fawn. After all, the deer's side was warm. Her fawn lay there waiting. But the narrator's word choices play on the eventual outcomes of his decision rather than the fawn's potential vitality, so that the fawn is simultaneously and oxymoronically alive, still, never to be born. The use of the word still is fascinating and multi-layered here. It simultaneously suggests that the fawn is still alive, making the narrator's choice all the more pressing. But it is still which renders it vulnerable and passive, inactive rather than active. If there is to be an agent here in this remote scenario, it must be the narrator. At the same time, still never to be born evokes the compressed, stillborn, anticipating the potential at least for a failed or dead birth. It is in the knowledge that all these potentialities lie ahead, but that the sole agency for each outcome rests with the narrator, that the poet remarks, "Besides that mountain road, I hesitated." His hesitation has broader implications, however, for while the deer is described throughout the poem in ways that establishes an inert, inorganic abstraction, the narrator's car, on the other hand, is organic and alive. It is, after all, by glow of the taillight that the narrator stumbles into the dark to discover what he can about the dead deer in stanza 2. While the deer is a heap, the car glows, illuminating the narrator's darkness. Moreover, that quality of animation, almost of animalization or personification, is intensified in stanza 5, where the car not only aimed ahead its lowered parking lights, but purred and even glared, its warm exhaust turning red. The curious mimicry and inversion has the car more animal than the deer, certainly more alive, and certainly in a closer relationship with the narrator. Thus, when the narrator notes, perhaps guiltily, "Around our group I could hear the wilderness listen," the group he speaks of consists of him, the car, and the deer and its unborn form. The ecological implications of that moment of pause, just like the caesural pause in stanza 1, where action hangs in the balance, are only too evident when one examines the language choices carefully in the text. The fact that the narrator makes his decision and reaffirms his straight-line reasoning does not make the choices any more palatable. And given that the natural world seems to be sitting in judgment on the narrator's action, it is, after all, actively listening in on the moment, one cannot help but wonder if the darkness at the end of the poem is somehow more profound than it is at the beginning. While the poem Travelling Through the Dark was published in a volume of the same name in 1962, perhaps it's not too far-fetched to see it as an ironic commentary on the increasing mechanization of our lives and our increasing estrangement from the natural world. The vision of the narrator more connected to the life of his vehicle than the organic life of the creature dependent upon him is an eerie prelude to SUVs, the Hummer, and the relentless despoliation of the natural world by generations of men and women, hopelessly out of joint.